Hi, it's Sierra Miller. I can't wait for you to check out my new collection of shoes and accessories at Designer Shoe Warehouse. If you love shoes as much as I do, then trust me, I got you. From cute sneakerinas to the perfect flip-flops to stunning heels, these shoes are all style, no drama. It's a girl's girl summer, and DSW has just the shoes. Shop the Sierra Miller collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Shop up to 40% off with minimum purchase and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Plus, pay at your own pace starting at 0% APR with Affirm. Terms apply.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and an exciting day in El Segundo today as Dalton Knecht slips to the 17th pick, and the Lakers draft him in just a really great get for the team. Rob Pelinka had some great quotes about this guy that we had ranked really highly. So, and this is a super common draft thing, but this was not unique to just the Lakers. I think Knecht was considered to be a top 10 talent in this draft. Quick disclaimer, neither Darius or I are, you know, NBA draft experts whatsoever. I try to learn enough so that I can have a coherent conversation with Mike Garcia. But I have watched a bit on all of these guys at this point as part of research for my job. And simply put, D, Knecht was a guy that wasn't talked about a lot. We did talk about him on our draft preview pod, but it was sort of a, yeah, but he's not going to be there, but he was.
It's always interesting because one of the things that I often do after the Lakers draft someone is, because I know very little, like saying we're not experts is like saying I'm not a Michelin star chef.
Thank you. Thank you. Such an understatement. That,
that said, one of the things I do is I do try to then go out and like look at what the subject matter experts do say. If it's your job to do draft analysis, I want to know what you think of the player before he becomes a member of the Los Angeles Lakers. Draft grades and that whole cottage industry of judging something after it happens, that's hot take world. What I want to know is, all right, you've got these lists of 50 players, 75 players, 100 players. Where do you think these players belong within the context of their draft class? And so when I hear Rob Pelinka say, well, this guy was in the top 10 on our board, when I hear Rob Pelinka say that if we were picking 10th in this draft and he was there, we would have taken him 10th. And then I go and look at on Gavoni's board, he was number 7. And in their most recent mock draft, ESPN's most recent mock draft, they predicted he might be drafted 6th overall. And then I go and look at what Vecini said about him and he had him 9th. Just having that player at 17, I think the Lakers got exceptional value at that draft slot. There's a bunch of people who thought this dude should have gone anywhere from 7 to 10 places higher. But then after I read what people say, then I start to like dive into what the skill set stuff is, Pete. And then I start to look at clips and then you know, the whole surge of like highlight reel stuff comes across. And then you start to see like, oh, well, what does this player actually do? And what is he actually supposed to be good at? What kind of college career did he have? And when I started to look at the stuff around Connect, I was just like, oh, this is an intriguing dude in a lot of ways to me. The skill set stuff, his backstory stuff.
Backstory is great.
I read this great article that was posted by The Athletic from January, when he was like sort of right in the middle of this like great tear that he was on, scoring like back-to-back 30-point games. And I think he had this string of games where he had like 100 and something points over like three games.
He had 13 25-point games in 40-minute games, right? The college game's shorter than the NBA game. It's 40 minutes to get 25 13 different times. He is a three-level scorer in a really exciting way that I think the fit with AD on offense. Again, he's the 17th pick. I don't want to oversell or anything, but he's a really good player that I think can help on some level right away.
Well, this is interesting too, and I'd love to have Mike Garcia on again.
Me too.
One of the things that was interesting to me when I was reading Vecini's draft guide, right? And so Sam Vecini, he works for The Athletic, and every year he puts out a very extensive draft guide. It's pretty long. In fact, it's not even up at The Athletic site, which you'd like. They do a story on it. He puts a link to it, but it's like a password protected PDF that you can download. And he's got all this information on all of these players, like who their parents were, if their parents had an athletic background, all kinds of stuff. Like he's the son of these two people. And like, it's super interesting stuff. So I'm looking at all of this stuff. And one of the things that I was reading with Sam's draft guide was that he's like, okay, I break up my player tiers into like, okay, tier one player, a tier two player. A tier one player would be someone like Wembanyama. In last year's draft, there might have been 6, 7, 8, 9 players that would have been either tier one or tier two players, right? And so it's just like, oh, you've got superstar potential, you've got all-star potential, and then tier three would be like, oh, you're going to be a solid starter or something like that. For Vecini, this year's draft started at tier three players because there is no Wembanyama in this draft. And there is not, maybe not even like an Asar Thompson or someone like that, where you're just like, oh, I see this dude as being like an all-star player. But that context then allows you to then view things year over year after year, and then really start to analyze like what this particular player could potentially be for your team. And so I don't recall what tier he had Connect in, but again, he had Connect as a top 10 prospect within this draft. So for me, which probably makes him a tier three guy. So for me, I'm looking at this as, well, the Lakers, they may not have drafted your classic like top 10 talent, right? Because in any given draft, a top 10 talent might be a higher tier player. But in this case, Pete, I feel like they got a great mix of someone who has the skill set and the sort of like mentality and approach and like pathway in order to be a contributing player next season. And so let's go to break here. And when we come back, I want to dive in a little bit more and start to project a little bit and talk about the pick a little bit more.
Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer, thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. With 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, you'll always have new flavors to explore. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals. Keep kitchen time to a minimum. Factor meals are ready in 2 minutes. No shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. Choose from 6 menu preferences to help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off.
Yeah, so let's talk about what we do know about Dalton Knecht. Super interesting story. He had a huge growth spurt. I think that's a big part of his basketball story. He was 5'8 as a sophomore in high school and still not that big by the end of his high school career, doesn't get any major offers and goes to a JUCO for a couple of years, has a growth spurt. By the end of that, he's 6'6". And his senior year is when he really emerges on the basketball scene as this high usage, three level scorer, a guy you run plays for, movement shooter type. On a JJ Redick team, right? I feel like there is some sort of harmonic convergence with this, D, in that JJ Pelinka is talking about how JJ's excitedly, you know, drawn up ATOs in the war room. It's kind of a cool visual to think about. So he has these guard skills from younger years as a shorter player that as he gets bigger, translate. And this is something that we've seen throughout the NBA, including our very own Anthony Davis. And so he has this growth spurt and but he's got some athleticism too, D. This is something that after the pick is being made and we're excited and we're doing our crash research and whatnot on him, that's one of the things that stands out. So talk to me a little bit about that. What stands out on tape to you about his athletic ability?
So right before we get to that, Pete, I just want to say that he did go to Northeastern Junior College, which was in Colorado. Then after 2 years there, he spent two seasons at Northern Colorado, which is in the Big Sky. So
we drafted a Nuggets fan, D.
So it's after okay. two seasons at threes. Northern we'll Colorado, he transferred to Tennessee. And he played at Tennessee for one season. He played in 36 games. And he shot 46% from the field, including 39.7% from three. He scored 21.7 points a game and grabbed 5 rebounds a game.
Eighth leading scorer in the country.
Just wanted to make sure that we offered a little bit of statistical context for what you were talking about in terms of like what the raw production actually looked like. We're not draft experts, so I'm going to sit here and say like, oh, great, I watched some Dalton Knecht highlights. That does not make me an expert at all. The thing I will say is that the things I saw through the clips that I watched were he had a nice downhill burst and he had a nice gliding sense to him when mm-hmm. he would elevate as like a 1 foot jumper.
1 foot jumper or a 2 foot jumper. Like he'll dunk on some dudes. If they're late on their rotation, he'll be able to get them.
He had some excellent plays in transition. He had some excellent plays as a cutter, both as a strong side cutter when it's just like teams were overplaying him because he's a shooter. And then yep. he is like using those that leverage the against them to cut back door. And then also some really good slot cutting and weak side cutting from the backside as strong side action develops and with a guy getting downhill. And then there he is looping in from the top side with a slot cut or leaking baseline in order to get a shot around the basket. He had enough size and enough strength and enough athleticism to finish at the basket with both force and finesse. And that stood out to me.
And with either hand, very ambidextrous yes. finisher around the rim.
He had a few nice left-handed finishes where he was leaping off of 1 foot and sort of slicing through a couple of defenders. These are very much like college finishes, but they will also, I think, effectively like work at the NBA level. I also think that those are ways to draw fouls. But 40% three-point shooter, Pete, and the type of guy that was clearly the focal point of his team's offense, and a guy that was hitting both spot up jumpers, but also like movement jumpers and coming off of screens, sidestep threes, step back threes, off of the dribble work with his three. So he had a lot to his game. And so when you talk about a three level scorer, yeah, that's not just, oh, I can spot up from the outside, yes, and get a catch and shoot three. And then I can like take one step in and hit a mid range jumper. And then if you run me off the line, I can make a layup. That's three levels as well. He was definitely doing all of that stuff, but he also had a lot of the individual shot creation stuff that was super intriguing to me as someone who could potentially be not like a number one, but like a 1C option potentially.
Well, think of the continuation of that sequence that you were just talking about, right? So he's a really good three-point shooter. I feel a hesitancy to oversell him as a laser. Like, and I think totally, he's got the potential to be. What's impressive to me about him as a scorer is the variety of ways that he scores, the variety of jumpers that he hits. He's not like a super, I'm going to bend and contort and hit this difficult shot, but he's tall and has a high release point and gets from his dribble pickup into the actual shot very fast. So it's like when you get to a high release point quickly and you're already tall, you're going to be able to get your shot off. And that, I think that has a level of translatability to the NBA that when you combine that with his ball handling skills, which he's not a really shifty guy, but it's functional and he'll come off of a ball screen and he's got a good rhythm as he comes off of it. He's going to like, and what you do is you kind of do a skip step and you hold it to see if, okay, did they react to it? If they don't react, okay, maybe I can hit the afterburners and shoot the gap right there and get to the basket. Or if they do react to it, then I can fake the drive and get into a pull up because I've got them on their heels. And so yeah, he has really great sense for that. So thinking about the sequence that you were talking about, it's like, okay, you run him off of a screen, say that play that JJ Redick was drawing up in the war room. Connect comes off of that, but say that the defense runs it well. It's not just, hey, I come off clean off of a screen, I get an open three, hooray. You get the ball, but you don't quite like the look that you have. Can you flow into the next thing and keep the offense going from there? That's a super valuable skill to have, especially on a team with LeBron and AD, because it adds a different dimension to the offensive capabilities.
Think of a guy like Austin Reeves. When you were talking about Connect and not necessarily being like a laser, right? No, like a laser is Reed Shepard. That kid shot like 52% on threes this season. And it's just like, that's a dude where absolutely cannot leave him open ever. He's hitting half of his three pointers, kind of unreal. But the stuff that you were talking about, that's what stood out to me when I was watching clips as well. It's like, when I talk about the burst, players who have to be defended a certain way because they're so capable as jump shooters, or they have the respect as a jump shooter, defenses treat them a certain way, and those players then also get a sense of how to beat defenses that are playing them a certain way. And so when I see Connect and he's basically that hang dribble that's going to go into a 1-2 step that's going to set up his jumper, if you get on your heels a little bit or you start to lean forward as that 1-2 step goes down and that hang dribble is up there, he was very good then at then getting low and push dribbling out and then getting into the gap in order to exploit that the defense was a little bit off balance when they were sort of defending him as a guy who was capable of hitting a pull-up jumper.
And if he doesn't sort of shoot that gap in that way at that time, that opportunity's gone.
Yes, and there's a timing to that, and there's a feel to that, and you get that feel by understanding what your strengths are as a player. You also get that feel by like watching tape and being someone who understands that there is a building process that you go through in order to get to the point where you're putting like reps and practice into like, this is what I'm doing on the actual court. So let's go to break here, because when we come back, Pete, I want to hit on a little bit of that pathway stuff that we were talking about earlier. So Pete, I'm a sucker for stuff like this. I'm a sucker for like the kid who had no scholarship offers. I'm a sucker for the kid who has a chip on his shoulder. I'm a sucker for the guy who had to work for everything that he got and understands that the work is what's going to get him to the next place as well. And so the article that I referenced earlier, the one that was written in January, Connect's coach at Tennessee was Rick Barnes. And Rick Barnes famously was Kevin Durant's coach at the University of Texas. And Connect has mentioned that Kevin Durant, his favorite player, and that he watched a ton of KD tape. He also mentioned today that he watched tape on Redick as well, which is super interesting, right? Because of like that movement shooter idea. The idea, Pete, of being someone who was a 5'8 sophomore in high school. And then by the time he was the end of his junior year, he was 6 foot. And by the end of his senior year in high school, he was like 6'2 or 6'3. But not a single Division I offer. He said he got some Division II offers, but nothing Division I. And he decided he was going to go and play JUCO ball instead. That player, Pete, that goes from that to being a unanimous All-American.
SEC Player of the Year.
As a fifth-year senior who's 23 years old. The path to that and the idea of like, no, man, the way that I get there is through the work. And like a theme that kept coming up in that article that I was talking about, and we'll have Jeannie link to this in one of the tweets that we put out when the pod goes out. But just like a lot of like, he's a gym rat. There was this story about him basically like working with one of his coaches and doing like 9 p.m. shooting sessions and like 10 p.m. sessions like at the gym.
That's the only way you get from JUCO to that. Yeah.
So that's exactly my point, Pete. And I want to bridge this to something that Redick said in his introductory presser, which is you have to embrace the work. You have to embrace the competition. And Redick was like this as a player, where it's like you have to love the routine and you have to love the process. Like we understand that like we are a result-oriented business, but Redick talked about this, that you have to love the process if you're actually going to get to the results, because like the pursuit of greatness, it can't be shitty. It can't be like a miserable time, right? And so someone like Connect, that's something to me that I'm intrigued by as well, because it's those habits that I think he's going to have to fall back on.
Yeah, that's what endures, is that type of work and those type of habits. And if you do have a thirst for learning and a skill set to be able to capitalize on it, I think that LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and that's a great, and JJ Redick, right? Despite his lack of experience, he certainly has no lack of knowledge and things. Like, come on, if you're a freaking movement shooter and JJ Redick is your head coach to start your career, that seems promising.
Think of if you're a movement shooter, is there a player in the history of the game that you might want to play with more than LeBron James?
Right.
If you're a movement shooter, how many big men in the league would you want to play with ahead of Anthony Davis? Like Nikola Jokic, baby? There's not many.
And exactly, because that's the exact archetype that is a compliment. And I don't want to get through this podcast without discussing weaknesses and
totally, right, 100%.
Like, he's the 17th pick in the draft. He was 23. Like, part of, as the skeptic in me, as you're talking about his rise to prominence, is that how much is that a 22-year-old, 23-year-old man, young man, beating sure. the crap out of 19-year-olds in college, right? That doesn't always translate. We'll get to the more skeptical type of view in a bit. However, his archetype, his type of player, and again, this is what I said earlier about his the variety of ways that he scores to me is more important than, again, the laser. Like, you have to be very good as a shooter. And he is, I think, very good as a shooter to be that three-level movement shooter and a threat in this way. But if you are having guys that can put pressure on the rim, it's a counter gravity, right? It's kind of this interplay that if Anthony Davis is setting a good screen and a defense is going like, oh crap, that's Connect coming off of this, he's hot tonight, we've got to get out to him, and LeBron is pulling the trigger and AD decides to slip it, like, there's great opportunities at the rim off of that. If AD sets a good screen, Connect comes off clean off that, you think LeBron's going to miss that pass, right? If LeBron resigns, I feel like I have to, at this point, you know, have yeah, this.
There are but caveats.
It's easy to fantasize, though, with his archetype of player. And even though you don't expect his type not to be a star, what's interesting is in today's game, a movement shooter is really the only non-superstar that you would run a lot of half-court plays for. Does that make sense? There's nobody else. It's like everybody else. It's like, oh, you're incredible with the ball in your hands in some way. Or there are some roll men, I suppose, but that's not as much running a play. And whereas if you have a guy that can come off of a screen and be a threat, it opens up a playbook that just plays right into what LeBron and AD do well.
Yeah, it's interesting. And a person who would understand that best is JJ Redick. He talked about that as like his role in Philly and his role with like the Clippers. And like, he talked about it when he was in Philly, like, look, it was Joel Embiid's team. It was Ben Simmons's team. But for all of that, Redick was still going to be on some plays like a primary option, a second option. And like, a lot of their half-court offense was going to be about featuring his skill set. Again, I don't want to put Connect in the same class of shooter as J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick is the same way I talked about Reed Shepard earlier. Yep. That was J.J. Redick coming out of college. And so I don't want to conflate things too much here. But I do want to pivot really quickly, Pete, because I know that we don't want to go too long. There's going to be a whole other day of the draft on Thursday.
That's fun. I kind of like this format, by the way. This is fun to draft your first rounder, talk about it, be excited for the night, come back early in the afternoon tomorrow, 1 p.m. Pacific time, kind of an odd start time. So be aware.
Yes, maybe there will be more players drafted during Taco Bell commercials, like Nikola Jokic famously was back in the day. The thing I was going to say about Connect, though, is that he does have some athleticism. He does have some pop. He does have a sturdy frame. He talked about in his year at 10 Tennessee, like he put on weight, he put on muscle, he got stronger. And clearly, I think that helped him become the player that he was that final collegiate season. But the level of fight and dog that we were talking about him having potentially is like that chip on his shoulder and that competitiveness. He's going to need all of that defensively. Pete.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong. You get a ton of respect from defenses as like a guy where it's like, oh, we got to pay attention to you. And then on the other side of the court, you also get a lot of attention from the opposition because they will target you and basically say like, oh, you're going to hurt us on the other end. We're going to see if you have the chops to stay on the floor on this end. And I think, again, I go back to what Redick said. When he was talking about the types of players that he's looking for, and he was like, I want two-way players. And I think it was purposeful that when Rob, rightfully so, was talking about how happy they were to make this pick, and he was talking about Connect's skill set, one of the things he said was, and he will defend. I like him saying that out front to sort of like put the expectation out there that like this is a thing that matters to us.
Also knowing that this is going to be the question mark. This is why this wonderful 6'6", three-level scorer might fall to 17 in the first place, is that it's not all sunshine and roses.
That's right. And so that ability to hang defensively and that desire to compete defensively is something that he's going to need to bring. And I think that he's going to, I'm sure, get a lot of talk from, you know, Austin Reeves about that and like what that's like, right? Because one of the things that happened in college was when Kinect got recruited in the transfer portal to go to Tennessee, one of the things that the Tennessee people said to him was, we had the number one defense in college basketball last season. And so we want you to come to Tennessee because either you're going to get better defensively or we'll be able to hide you defensively. Kinect was basically saying, well, I don't want to be hidden on defense. I don't want you to have to hide me. I want to get better on that end of the court. And again, I've not watched tape. I can only go by what I've read and seen. I think the results were probably more in his favor than not, but that doesn't automatically make you a high-level defensive player. I know that there are going to be players who got drafted both in round one and more so probably in round two, where these guys are going to be defensive specialists. But the fact that Kinect understood that through the pitch of him even going to Kentucky, that part of that was at least this idea of like, we can help you improve defensively. And if you don't improve, then we'll just protect you. But him embracing that idea of wanting to improve, I think that's a mentality that he's going to need to carry forward into the pros, Pete, and just be someone who is embracing the challenge and understanding what the challenge is going to be, that like, all right, you're going to play on the wing in the NBA. There are no slouches out there.
So in that context, I like to think of him in context of the other threes that we have on the team. So I think that his fit in a grouping with Rui and Vando, I like as well, in that there are three different types of threes. Now, there's the one that we're lacking is the guy that has like both the foot speed on the ground and the ability to knock down, catch and shoot threes at a decent clip. Now, I think that's too limited a view on what Vando can or cannot do. It's just in terms of the types of threes that you have. I think that if for the games that really, that may not be the best Vando fits, I think that that might be a Kinect game, you know, and that's part of building a good roster. And this is in the broader context, and we'll have conversations coming up about kind of what's next of the Lakers roster building, but keeping the pick. So the Bridges trade happens the day before the draft. And there's obviously people want the Lakers to make moves, right? To actually go for it and make some moves to try to win a title. And so that inflames a certain degree of, come on, do something. We need to win this year. But the point is that the 17th pick in this year's draft, there were a couple guys that actually could play. I'm not saying that they're, you know, game seven of the NBA finals going to be on the floor in the five closing minutes of the games, but can certainly help you get to where you want to go and can contribute right away. And that was one thing that I noted in Pelinka's language in the post, in the interviews, was there was a certain level of contribute right away language that was not present last year.
Well, last year they drafted a 19-year-old who was a freshman, right, in JHS. And then Maxwell Lewis, who showed a lot of promise at Pepperdine, but didn't play at the highest level of college basketball, right? Like, I think there was an understanding that Lewis was going to be a little bit raw and that it was going to take some time for him. So to me, when you draft a 23-year-old who was the player of the year for his conference and an All-American, that's someone that I think if, just like Memphis drafted Zach Edey at number 9, right? Who was like one of those players who is like a national player of the year type. If you're looking at those guys and you're drafting them in the position that they are specifically because you believe they can contribute, I think it's good for Rob to set those expectations and for him to sort of set that bar of like, look, we want you to compete for playing time. We want you to compete for a rotation spot. We'll see where it goes, Pete, but we were happy campers when we were texting.
If I could share a bit of my experience, part of my job lately has been to put together sort of the a synopsis on the 10 or 15-ish guys that might be in our range of the draft. And trying to figure that out has been, you know, it's a bit of a challenge. It takes a little bit of investigating of like, okay, who might be there? And one guy who just never popped up, or when he did, it was with this caveat of, but he won't be there, right, is Dalton Kincaid. And so as he starts dropping, I think it gets to like pick 13. And I'm like, oh, fuck, he might drop. And so it's like furious last minute research, because basically my job is to just shout out a certain amount of basic facts about him as a basketball player and inform, you know, and do all of that. There's a certain amount of like, oh, crap, is he going to drop? And so that was part of what was fun about tonight is it, my favorite one of these of all time was in 93 with Van Exel. It was a TNT draft with the old Chirons and stuff. And Van Exel had just gone on a really fun Final Four run for Cincinnati. And Bob Huggins' team, great team, and he was really clutch in that. And so I remember watching those games, and he's a lefty point guard. I'm a lefty point guard. Let's go. I love this guy. And our first round pick that year was George Lynch out of North Carolina, out of very good North Carolina teams, who was really hardworking forward, good role player. We played him in the finals several years later with the 76ers team, the AI team that we played in 2001. And he was our first round pick. But I'm watching the draft and like it's the 20s and I'm like, yo, nobody's drafted Van Exel yet. I'm like 12. And he keeps dropping, and Denver has the pick before us, and they take Darnell Mee, or at least that's who I think they took. They take Darnell Mee with, I think, the 36th pick, and we get the 37th pick, and I'm like, it's my first like draft crush where I had done just enough research. I was just enough into it that I was like, I really want this guy on my team. And I remember when they were like, all right, it's Nick Van Exel out of Cincinnati. Ah, let's fucking go. Like one of those great moments. And so tonight was, you know, we'll see what Kincaid turns out to be. That's a high bar to reach the, hey, we got Nick Van Exel in the second round and then he kicks ass for us.
Yes, level
of fun.
Yes.
But there was a certain level tonight of like, oh, is Kincaid going to drop? And then when we took him, it's, let's go.
I'm sure that there were loud cheers and celebrations in that draft room, particularly when Philly made their selection. I think Rob might have even, if not outright said this, alluded to it.
White knuckle moments.
Yeah, like in the lead up to them being on the clock, it's like, oh, wait, he's there? And so it's like, oh, the 13th pick, the 14th pick, someone's going to take him, right? And I sort of felt like that last season, because there were a couple of players that I was eyeing in the draft, and like they just happened to go a couple of picks before the Lakers selected two. I was just like, oh, okay. And then this year, though, it was the Lakers got seemingly their guy. And it was a guy that they never would have thought would have been theirs in the first place, Pete, just based off of the circumstances of it all. But top 10 talent in this draft, seemingly by consensus. And Rob mentioned this consensus within their room. If you could get all of those people to agree on anything, you've probably done something right in your life to this point.
Amen. Fun night, fun draft night. You know, we'll see what the future holds, but it's fun to dream and it's fun to think of what the team could be. Draft starts again tomorrow, second round, 1 p.m. Pacific time. Lakers have the 55th pick. One outcome I think is that's going to result of splitting this into 2 days. There's way more time for GMs to talk about trades, right? So we'll see if a slew of those go down in second rounds that often have a lot of movement. So do the Lakers buy a pick? Do they stand pat just at 55? If they do, who do they draft? We will be back tomorrow to discuss. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Score. Two, score. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?